The Musician's Map ebook is the new definitive guide on building success in music. Whether you're just starting out, or you're looking for gigs, or you're trying to make a career, the Musician's Map ebook is right for you. The Musician's Map ebook contains 20 years of music industry experience distilled into a 40,000 word guide to achieving your goals in music. Can't read? Get the Musician's Map audiobook. 4.5 hours of author Kane Power speaking directly into your own ears. That's right, even you can still benefit from the Musician's Map Guide to Building Success in Music. Head to musiciansmap.org/books right now to get your copy of the Musician's Map ebook or audiobook. Get it today and receive a special one-time-only offer of a personal pat on the back from author and podcast personality Kane Power. The Musician's Map ebook and audiobook is also available at Amazon and Audible if you feel like supporting those giant websites as well. The Musician's Map ebook, your guide to building success in music. Proof of purchase required for pat on the back. To receive a pat on the back, you must travel to Raglan, New Zealand. Travel not included in purchase price. Hey everyone, welcome to the Musician's Map podcast. My guest this week has travelled all over the world playing music. She's won game shows, been a resident artist, had her music on film and television, arranged and performed for the Auckland Symphony Orchestra, and opened shows for the likes of Paul Weller, Jules Holland, and John Mayer. Her list of achievements is huge, and she embraces a diverse approach to living as a full-time musician. This week, I'm talking to singer, keyboardist, pianist, and songwriter Lisa Crawley. Lisa talks about her years of making music as a job to fund making music as a passion. We discuss being independent, tailoring for specific audiences, music marketing, artist residencies, collaboration, opening slots, and her new cabaret show, Elizabeth. We caught up while I was in Melbourne a few weeks ago.
You had quite a clear drive then.
I did, yeah, and I was really passionate about the acting stuff in musicals especially, which sort of kind of carried through high school, and then I was accepted to an overseas musical theatre school, but we didn't have the funding or the money to go and live there for that long. For 3 years, I couldn't afford to do that, so that door sort of shut, I guess, and I just changed direction, and I went to Auckland Uni and started, I think I did a major in jazz piano for about a year, and that lasted a year, and I didn't feel like it was really my thing, jazz. I appreciated it. Perhaps I was too lazy to really sit down and just learn as much as I needed to do. I don't know if you've studied much jazz stuff.
I've studied music,
yeah.
But not specifically jazz.
Yeah, well, so, yeah. There was a pop paper as well, but it was, I did one paper, which was good because it made me perform my songs, but I think the course was still kind of getting set up, and I just wasn't really that happy in myself, and that band was coming to an end, and I guess going to that university at the time was a bit of a substitute for what I wanted to be doing. Yeah, so I left after a year because I got offered a job in Japan. Although I wasn't the best jazz player, I had really good ears, I suppose, and I could accompany my vocals, and had been working playing in hotels from about 17. So I was getting gigs and learning that way as well. Mm. One night, I think someone was in the audience and asked if I would be interested in a contract in a little place called Atami in Japan. And I was just not very happy, like, in myself for what I was doing. I was a bit lost. And so I ended up 2 weeks later just moving to this tiny town for 4 months.
And that was just someone in a crowd at a hotel gig?
Yeah, it was a guy that booked the entertainment who lived in Japan but was over there in Auckland. He was a Kiwi guy.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, okay, why not?
You never know who's watching, hey?
Yeah, you never know, even in a hotel lobby. So, yeah, then I was over in Japan. So, yeah, things just kind of, I mean, all throughout high school I did concert bands and musicals and all the dance opportunities and just kind of took on whatever I could. And, yeah, I had little acting stints throughout that. Just same thing when I was little, I wanted to be, again, you're learning how cool I am. I wanted to be on Shorten Street, so I looked at the credits and I was like, wrote down the name and got out the yellow pages and looked at the agencies and made my parents sign up so they could come and they could take me to be on the show.
Yeah.
And yeah, just was kind of like a bit of a nerd, really.
Did you get on?
Yeah, I had a few parts. Probably up till I was about 17, I started off like no speaking, and then I had like a couple of lines, and then I had a couple of episodes in a row. That was probably my peak.
Sweet.
Yeah, living the dream.
You're a star.
Oh, yeah, you know.
I had no idea I was in the presence of a Shorten Street actor.
Well, everyone that's kind of an actor probably has been on it, maybe. Yeah. I mean, I was excited, very excited at the time. Yeah, I mean, I did a few ads and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So always just kind of looked for opportunities. I guess I'm still doing that.
Yeah.
You know, seeing what's out there. Japan was interesting, and I had no idea what to expect because they didn't tell me what really. I had 2 weeks' notice. So I learned some key Japanese phrases, introducing myself, realised we're actually doing like a – there were three other entertainers there, all from New Zealand, but quite a bit older than me and quite used to doing that sort of work. And it was like dinner shows, so people would come – it was a tiny little town. People would come from Tokyo, sit down for their dinner in this fancy ballroom. It was quite a creepy, old-fashioned, beautiful hotel. Think like David Lynch kind of
– yeah.
Beautiful but weird.
Yeah.
I think the first review on TripAdvisor was like creepy hotel. So
cool.
Overlooking the ocean. And yeah, we did these like 2 half-hour dinner shows, a mixture of singing, dance and instruments. It was like a bit of everything. And then afterwards I would go to their fancy lounge and play 2 sets. So that was 7 nights a week for 4 months without one night off. And I got so anxious. I just found it like just such a change of lifestyle because there were no English speakers. It was an interesting time, but I wasn't into university, and it was a chance to do something different, and it certainly was different.
Yeah, wow. You must have 4 months playing every single day for a few hours.
Mm.
Like your chops must have gotten incredible.
Yeah, they weren't super long sets, but the songs were just so cheesy as well.
Yeah.
Lots of requests for Titanic song. And Hero, the guests were beautiful and lovely. No one really spoke any English because it was such a tiny little resort town. But for me, the biggest affirmation coming out of that was that I do not want to sing those songs.
Yeah.
I want to sing my own songs.
Yep.
So from there, went to London and just played anywhere I could really for 6 months without a visa. So I was just working at this random nightclub starting at 10 p.m. for 12 hours. Was weird.
What?
For £5 an hour.
I remember getting £5 an hour.
Yeah. Did you live in London as well?
Yeah. Yeah. For 7 years.
7 years?
Yeah. Did lots of stuff, but my first job was minimum wage. I think it was $5.64.
That's a lot more than I got. 64 more cents than I got. What was that doing?
That was working in a bar.
Okay.
Yep. In a gastropub, which I did for 6 months before I got into.
Was it under the table?
No.
Oh, it was legit.
It was legit.
If I say mine was under the table, maybe I'm going to get in trouble. But the bar got shut down because of a stabbing. So that sets the tone of where I was
classic.
Working. Yeah.
So when did you do your first EP of original material?
Yeah, that would have been around that year I was in uni. So I recorded something, just a 4-track EP. That I did with my friend Pete Wood. Some of it I recorded at uni on the piano there. And then I actually did things really backwards. I did all the piano and then I tried to put the drums and bass around it. I just didn't know what I was doing. My friend Pete Wood helped me with that one. He was cool. And I had something to take with me over there to London. So that was my first release was 2007, I think.
Yeah.
After my first London trip. So I came back to New Zealand and then recorded that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And from there it was an EP and then another EP?
I was a little, like, I didn't really know what I was doing. So I printed very optimistically. I was like, yeah, I'll just get 2,000 copies of that. No distribution tour deal.
Yeah.
And so, I was, you know, you want a coaster? I've got a coaster for you. I've still got some.
Yeah.
But it was cool. Like, that's just how you learn things. It's like, okay, maybe I don't need to get 2,000 right now.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to find someone to put them in shops. Okay, learn that. Yes, and then so 2 years later I did another EP, and that was after coming back from London again. So I went back to New Zealand and got a work visa, went back to London with that work visa, did some more shows. And London was hard. I started to get some good shows and get some good opening things. And there were a lot of shows, as you probably know, that are like – people do a tally by your name of how many punters you bring.
Yeah.
Who you here to see? Who you here to see? You know, and yeah. You might get like £10 if you're lucky.
Once you get 10 people in the door, then they start to give you.
Then you don't lose money. Yeah. Then they don't make you pay them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it.
Did you do gigs there?
Yeah. Lots for years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some amazing, amazing gigs and some truly awful ones.
Yeah. Did you play the Bedford ever? It was like this cool place that did live broadcasts, which at the time was.
Was that
pretty...
in Balham?
Yeah. I liked that place.
Yeah.
That was cool. I also joined Rodney Fisher's band, who's the singer from Good Shirt. So he lived there and he started up a band and there were like 12 of us in the band. So it was super fun. And we went to South by Southwest during that period as well.
So how did you hook up with him?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I don't know. Probably just email,
word
of mouth, friends of a friend or something. Because I knew of them and I was a Good Shirt fan as well. And I think my old band, Villiers, from when I was in high school, we played with them sometime, which would have been very exciting for me back then. And now, like I played with Rodney a few months ago. He's a really good friend.
Mm.
Yeah, so I released the second EP when I got back from London that time around and my visa was no more.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say I was stuck in New Zealand. I was in New Zealand just figuring out what to do next, really.
And so you're entirely independent.
Yes. Yeah, I've always been independent. I've had a bit of funding from New Zealand On Air for videos after I probably did maybe two or three of my own self-funded ones. I think that showed them at the time that I was going to be doing it regardless. And then they kindly funded a couple of videos.
Mm.
Yeah, so I've probably done now 14 music clips maybe, videos.
Wow.
Some better than others, you know.
Yeah, of course.
The first one was 2007, so the last 11 years. You know, it's that all that acting that I'm not doing that I just vicariously coming out for these music videos.
Cool.
Yeah. There have been a variety. Some I saved up and spent quite a lot on others. My last video was done for no money at all.
Nice.
Which was different. Very DIY, but I think it worked well for that particular song.
Have you got friends who are filmmakers or are you?
No, actually, that particular video I filmed at gigs. I filmed people while I was singing at weddings because it's called Wedding Band. And I filmed people from the perspective of the musician, the less glamorous perspective. There's no faces in the clip, really.
Yeah.
And then I went because the song is contrast with talking about being overseas and doing your own thing, coming back and this harsh reality of being a wedding singer.
Yep.
Completely, you know, fictional, of course. but yeah, I was like filming in Philippines just with my iPhone and even underwater. I can't really swim, but I did snorkeling for the first time and had the iPhone in the bag and there's some footage of that in the clip as well. So yeah, it was a very different approach and I had someone help me edit it. That was that one.
I want to talk more about you being indie because you've released a couple of albums as well.
Yeah.
How are you finding it? How are you funding it?
Funding, ever since I was young, I just put any money I've earned into music.
Mm.
So I don't own a house or anything that a lot of people my age might do, which, you know, sometimes I'm really... not envious. Sometimes I'm like, that would be cool to do that because there's just no guarantees with, you know, recording an album apart from the fact you're going to have an album, but there's no guarantee people are going to necessarily hear it or like it or buy it.
Yeah.
But I just felt like there wasn't another option. I just wanted to do that because I loved it too much, I suppose. Ever since probably working at Dunkin' Donuts or 15 or whatever, just putting the money aside for music stuff.
Yeah.
And worked doing those gigs I didn't necessarily advertise or want to do to put money aside. And that's actually still how I do things.
Yep.
If I need to sit in the corner and play at a function to get paid to pay my band for my gig I care about, then I'll do that. And just kind of in my head, I will say it's work rather than a gig.
Sure. Okay. So you
and play.
You make the separation.
Yeah, I have to. Otherwise I'll go crazy.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'd be like, this is my life. People walking past, like asking you to turn it down and with headphones. And I don't mind. It's like good people watching. Occasionally it's a little soul destroying, but occasionally you also get to make someone really happy with a request or something. And for me, I guess because of the training or musical training I've done, I can probably learn songs in the car on the way to things if I need to learn a special song for something. Just got to that point where I can hear the notes and so I'm not putting too much. I'm not like, instead of being at home writing a song, I'm not like, well, sometimes I am learning stuff I don't really want to be doing necessarily, but compared to maybe some people, I don't have to slave away for too long on learning maybe a cover for something.
Yep.
So I can kind of get away with it in that regard. And there's heaps of agencies actually in Australia that have similar kind of musicians that want to do their own thing, but they need to make money. They enjoy playing with other people. So what they do is they put you together with different band members under the same band name, so you're not using your original, your name, to do these functions. And you show up and you say, call out a song, call out the key, and you just have to do it straight away.
Wow.
So it takes, which you kind of think, oh, that's really lazy to not have a rehearsal, but it's just the fact that people have kind of worked really hard, I think, to get to that point where they can do that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Not everyone can do
that. And if someone doesn't know what they're doing, then it'll be quickly obvious and they won't get any more work.
Yeah.
But which has been quite refreshing because you're not using your name attached to playing a song you don't really want to be doing.
Yep. Yeah. But I mean,
but it's been a good way to earn money. And
yeah, and for all intents and purposes, you are a full-time musician.
Yes.
Which is, it's amazing.
So also another avenue of earning some income is I do a little bit of teaching.
Yep.
When I was in New Zealand, I was mentoring with the Music Commission program, but here I teach piano and singing just part-time and then go and sing on ads, radio ads, and even some voiceover work.
Awesome.
Which, is all work towards paying for the, I'm independent, but, I might, if I have a CD, I'll hire a PR person, which is just so much money.
Yeah.
As you probably know.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like, is this worth it? But the alternative is not finding that out for yourself. And I've had a lot of learning curves in terms of choosing who to work with. I briefly was managed for a while in New Zealand by maybe the same manager that someone else you've interviewed as well, and ended up kind of finding out that they weren't being quite so honest about some things, and also that crossed over to my publishers at the time where I went through emails and was getting some direct inquiries and I was like, okay, let's figure out if this publishing thing is worth it, and realized that they'd given away my songs for ads without telling me.
Oh my God.
Even by watching some local shows, I discovered this. And so I, being quite a young, determined young kid, I guess that's still in me that I wasn't going to let that go. So I've chased up those things and have learned for myself. I don't know. I mean, I guess they seemed reliable at the time. You just got to be really careful.
Yeah.
On who you trust, but
yeah, I mean, but that's so difficult because, you spend so much of your childhood and so much of your early years as a musician working towards, working with people like this, and someone says, hey, I want to be your manager, and you look at who they've worked with and you go, yes, finally, someone wants to help
me. That's right.
And so you probably just jump at it